KWMRT.org. It's 5 o'clock, time for Epicenter here on KWMR. Normally on a Thursday, it is Katie Eberle talking with a reporter from the Point Reyes Light. With this holiday time, that is not happening. I'm Lyons Filmer, and I'm going to present to you a rebroadcast of a program from one of our locally produced shows, Nonviolence Radio. Epicenter is airs on KWMR every Monday through Thursday at 5 o'clock, featuring a wide array of community affairs for our local watersheds. This rebroadcast of Nonviolence Radio, hosted by Stephanie Van Hook and Michael Nagler, has permaculture and nonviolence as their subject. Please stay with us.
Greetings, everybody. I'm Stephanie Van Hook, your host here on Nonviolence Radio, and I'm here in the studio with my co-host and news anchor, Michael Nagler. I came across a very powerful statement the other day. It said this. It said, "There is hope. We can work with nature. We can restore and design regenerative ecosystems. We have a choice, permaculture." And that statement is by Matt Powers, our guest today on Nonviolence Radio. We want to explore the topic of permaculture and the relationship between permaculture and nonviolence in particular, because Matt also makes a very hopeful claim that in the time of climate crisis, that permaculture can hold some of the solutions, if not most of the solutions, to handling that transition. And at the same time, here at Nonviolence Radio and at the Meta Center, we think that nonviolence has a lot to do with the solution to how we handle great transitions like climate change. So we want to weave together this discussion between what is permaculture and what is nonviolence. So to do that, I want to introduce Matt Powers. If you go to thepermaculturestudent.com, you'll find all of his resources. He's an author of the Permaculture Student 1 and 2, which has been translated into many languages, over 12 languages, I believe. He's a permaculturalist, obviously, and a very hopeful person. And we hope to get a little bit of inspiration from him today on the show. Welcome to Nonviolence Radio, Matt Powers.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
It's going to be an awesome conversation, because how we are going to weave these two ideas together, I think, is going to be a lot of fun. So I'm going to bring in Michael Nagler, too, to the show as sort of to bounce the ideas back and forth. So let's start with you, Matt Powers, about, in just a few words, I know that you can probably say a ton about it for hours, if not in books and chapters, about what is permaculture. So in a few words, how would you define what permaculture is?
In simplest terms, it's seeing the world through the eyes of nature to the benefit of people, systems, and natural systems. And then regeneratively, so it goes on into the future. And that's really it. That's why I feel like nonviolence and nonviolent communication is totally part of permaculture. And we use this word permaculture, but it's really an ingredient that's been part of our best cultures and the best parts of humanity since we've been in existence.
Mm-hmm. You can see, at nonviolence, we talk about raising the image of the human being. So, Michael, how would you define what nonviolence is in relationship to this idea of permaculture that Matt Powers put forward?
Thank you, Stephanie. Hello, Matt. It's perfectly compatible. I usually define nonviolent action as the engaging of a negative drive and transforming it into a creative positive outlet. And I'm remembering a statement made by my teacher some years ago, Sri Eknath Ishwarani Sadra. In deep moments of meditation, he can see anger arising in his consciousness, coming in as raw energy and going out as creative action. So the art of learning how to do that in yourself and then building that up into systems of the kind of permanence that you're talking about, Matt Powers, that's nonviolence. So that's where the two start to come together, in addition to the obvious idea that nature is a living being and harming her is a form of violence, a particularly stupid form because it harms us as well.
Yeah, and it makes us realize there's that concept of the inner being, where what hurts me hurts you and hurts the future of all things.
And how do you see permaculture helping us to redefine who we are as human beings?
Well, I think that there's this separateness, right? There's this distinct othering that comes from Western philosophy that we've all been raised with implicitly and explicitly. I was an English major, so it was super explicit in Shakespeare, right? Mm. And so permaculture teaches us that we're not in a hierarchy and we're not the pinnacle. A lot of times violence comes from a place where you're afraid, and I would maybe try to argue at some point in my life that it's all fear-based. It's a scarcity perspective. And so I think permaculture, this idea that we can have an abundant future if we partner with the patterns of nature, makes it so all the conflicts that we've ever had, they're all rooted in this idea that, oh, I don't have enough water. I don't have enough land. I don't have enough food. I don't have enough prestige. I don't have enough money. It's all around the scarcity, or I don't have enough love. Or they're gonna leave me. It's all this fear based, and it's rooted in this idea that the world we're living is finite, but it's truly can be infinite. We've created this finiteness and scarcity through our treatment of the environment, and that's why I really think that if we can partner with nature, I always talk about the seed economy. So the seed economy was the original economy. We used to save seeds, and then we would have so many seeds that we started to experiment with them, and it created our whole economy. And then what would happen if we went back to that? I mean, right now we're in a scarcity economy. Instead of the seeds getting 1 to 100, 100 to 1,000 every season, and wealth becoming this thing that just continues to grow, and experimentation and creativity just flows from it. Because, I mean, that's where bread came from. They had too much bread. They mashed it up, made porridge, and someone left it out one day, and then it got all funky. And they were said, you got to eat it. And then the person said, I'm not going to eat that. It's funky. It's fine. We'll cook it. And then it rose, and it was bread. It came out of abundance, an economy of abundance partnering with nature. And so we've just got to turn that back up. We've got to go back to that place of abundance where it's like, oh, yeah, food's not an issue in our society because food's everywhere. See that tree right there? That's what's in season right now, right here on this property. And then everything becomes, there's no food scarcity. There's no water scarcity because the way we treat the landscape traps water and so much that it just leaks these pure, you know, these pure springs that come out of the landscape. That's what happens. This landscape's full of water. And so there's all these things that if we just saw nature, and this is also seeing each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
If we just saw ourselves as part of this great system, you mentioned violence in nature and everything. I really don't see violence in nature as this like Darwinian thing at all. The animals that are being, you know, harvested by the other animals are the ones that are sick or weak. And it always, on the broader scale of things, makes things better. And it's like they're just the pathogens, the diseases that get us when we're not in harmony with nature, or you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I see it all as part of this system of trying to make us better. And when we're in alignment, we spread that pattern.
And I see that what you're saying, Matt Powers, is the need to re-educate ourselves about who we are and our relationship to nature. And there's all kinds of ways that this old story mentality brings us to act violently to the earth, and climate change being a grand manifestation of all of the different ways that we've become disconnected with earth. So can you talk about why you're hopeful in a time of climate change and how permaculture is part of that solution, if not most of it?
You know, the word permaculture is just a word. It's just this collection of sounds. You know what I mean? A collection of symbols that have sounds associated with them. The actions that we take, those are the things that really matter and that are lasting. So I just wanted that caveat because you may be like, a listener may hear and be like, oh, well, that's agroecology, agroforestry, holistic management, or that's this or that or that. And it's like, yeah, they're all connected. We got words for everything and spare words, and, you know, to boot. I really do believe that the facts are out there, and you can go out and research them. Just to start with a really great classic example, I don't know if you've heard, maybe listeners have heard about the great leaps and bounds that China has made to fight climate change. One of those things that happened was the water restoration project in the Los Plateau. They took an area that was the place, the starting point of the Chinese dynasties. The Han Dynasty started there. They just farmed it. It's where agriculture began. They farmed it until it was just beaten, and then they grazed it until it was degraded and desertified. And all the silt that created the Yellow River's yellowness came from there. The dust that made the people in northern China adapt their eyelids so that their eyelids go straight down instead of have that flap, because that flap would make you go blind if you lived there. They fixed that in 9 years by creating terraces, planting perennial foods. And in an area where there was hunger and there was starvation, and parents were convinced that their kids were going to starve, they now have such hope. You see these people wearing suits. They're working in their plots, and it was amazing as they empowered the people in China. They gave them leases on this land, and the people rose up and changed the whole landscape themselves. They rescued themselves, and the rest of China saw. And that's why this 15,000 acres turned to 35. They got more funding, and then everyone around them said, "We have to change Chinese law. We want that in our province." And that's why 500,000 square kilometers is now green. And you can go over and Google Earth and fly over it and just marvel at what humans are actually doing right now. And that gives me hope. And that's even old news. I have friends in Saudi Arabia who have proven that all that water that comes once a year that rips through and destroys things, that you can pacify that with earthworks. You can slow that water down with check dams and gabion dams, and then you could pacify and soak that water in. And within 3 years, you can turn a desert into an area where there's no open dirt, no open nothing. It's all plant all the way through, all the year round. So, and then if you checked out TED Talks in the recent, you know, the past year, you might have heard about nano clay. They figured out how to get clay, you know, taking it down to a nanoparticle size, to infiltrate sand. And as soon as it can infiltrate, this is the key. They've been waiting for over 100 years of testing to figure this out. And once they can do that, they can plant and they can walk away, and that tree will grow. And so we are about to open the door to greening all the deserts, not just using earthworks, not just using plant appropriate, using nano clay. It's going to change everything. And it's just water and clay. There's no chemicals. There's no harm done. It just facilitates so the fungi can facilitate the bacteria to start, and then it all the succession begins. So those kinds of things give me incredible hope. And then when we just think about what is hope, well, hope is a product of observation and research. In order to, you know, get more observations and understand them, we got to research and study. And then once we get all that information and we feel inspired, we got to act. And that's when practice comes into play. And then in order to power ourselves, to keep ourselves going, we need gratitude. And that's why we practice reflection. And we think about where we've gone, what we've done, and that's where hope blossoms and strengthens, because we know what's right. We know what's possible. And then we go and do it, and we see that we've done it, and that's when we're fed. And I've done it. I've worked with people who have done it, and I'm now friends with all of them. And it just feeds me and gives me such great hope. And that's why I feel like it's my responsibility to turn around and make these kind of articles, videos, courses, where I can inspire and teach people, because the answers are there. The you know, abundant future, the more beautiful world that Charles Eisenstein talks about, is waiting for us. And it's what's wild is, as crazy as things seem, it's never been a safer time to live on the earth. And we've never been closer to the realization of who we really are in the scheme of nature than right now. So that's why I get hope.
Well, for those of you just tuning in, that inspiring discussion is with Matt Powers, the permaculturestudent.com. You can find his information and learn more about permaculture and find his workbooks and curricula all there. So I want to tie this back into nonviolence to really show that what you are talking about is nonviolence in practice. And nonviolence is about working with nature's laws. That it, they say, Gandhi said that nonviolence is the supreme law of the human being.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that anything that we do, the reason violence doesn't work is because it's going against the law of our being. It's going against the idea that you and I are united fundamentally at a heart level, and what hurts you hurts me. What hurts the environment hurts me. That we're united at that place. And yet, at the same time, he calls for a need for unity and diversity. So diversity at the surface as creative expressions of that force of creative energy. And that seems to me to be one of the principles of permaculture, is the creative expression of nature's abundance and beauty and the laws behind nature. But before I get to dig into that a little bit more with you, I want Michael to talk a little bit about constructive program and how permaculture fits into the bigger movement of nonviolence, in the way that it's not necessarily direct resistance. Seed resistance can be that, and especially in a time of the Monsantos and the seed patenting and so forth. But how does permaculture fit into the picture, Michael Nagler?
Yeah, permaculture is definitely an important, and as Matt was just making so clear, an extremely hopeful element of constructive program. But there's one thing that people don't get often about constructive program, and that is to think if you do something constructive, that's constructive program. But actually, real constructive program will have the kind of impact that Stephanie was just alluding to, that you will be confronted by the system at some point. So if you're doing something that will never provoke resistance, it's not constructive program. It's just a constructive thing. But the beauty of it is, if you do something that does provoke, you are being proactive. They are being reactive. And you are moving from a position of strength. Because you are, well, take, for example, Bacha Khan. He goes all over his area, the Pashtun area of what is now Afghanistan, building schools. And the British say, you're not allowed to do that. Only we can build schools here. And the people have seen what he's doing, and they're drawn to that, and they can see for the first time that it's the regime that's taking it away from them. Versus what happened, for example, my classic example of how not to do it was in Peru, the Shining Path, you know, Sendero Luminoso. They went around killing policemen, etc., and they showed that they could kill and kill and kill, but they never showed that they could build anything. And the people eventually said, we do not want this. So I think the thing for us to think about jointly, Matt, the people of your persuasion and people who have our particular angle on things, is when and how will the things that we're building run into resistance, and which is to be welcomed, and what shall we do about it? Have you given that kind of thing any thought?
Yeah, and I think we are there. That's why we have a legal garden. That's why we have people being, you know, arrested for, you know, sharing their food. You know what I mean? That's why we have people being arrested for sharing milk. We are seeing our society as becoming unnatural. How natural is it to grow your own food? Except we're putting regulations that we're making it illegal to save seed. It's like we're making nature illegal to control us. It's so violent relationship. I mean, oh dear. but yeah, I think we're right there right now, and I think that. The way I see it, because, you know, interaction online, this kind of stuff gets trolls like it's troll candy. But the reality is those moments of breakdown or attack are actually opportunities to teach. Because then when we show that grace, that collected inner peace and response where you are showing where you're coming from and not reacting. You continue with your message of peace, of harmony, and then they go, oh, wow, so you're not that. Okay. And because they're expecting you to just fight right back and fight right back and have a fight. But I've had people, you know, attack me, being like, oh, if this was so great, you know, you'd be giving it away free and this and that. And it's like, oh, yeah, I have scholarships. Are you interested? And they had, like, called me names and stuff. And like, you know what I mean? And got into it. But it's when we respond in those critical moments where they're like, hey, you shouldn't do that. You can't do that. And be like, oh, but this is people care. This is going to take care of your children and my children. This changes everything. It's like, oh, it's like we're having that conversation. It's a totally different thing. You change the whole board when you stop reacting violently.
Absolutely. And it also seems to show a confidence in what you're saying, that if you can stand by it without getting agitated when somebody offers criticism of it, it shows that you have the mind and you've seen the results of it, basically, and that you stand by the results of what you've seen. And that you're going about things in a scientific way, that if something isn't working for everybody, you ask yourself, why? And I think that's a lot of the concern that people do have, is they feel they're afraid they're going to be left out of a solution. Now, the power of permaculture and the power of nonviolence really comes down to the ideas of competition versus cooperation. And I know that you've said a few things about it, and I'd like to explore with you what that looks like. How is cooperation, how is it more powerful in nature than competition? And then we can try to apply that to our human relationships as well. What can we look out for to understand how powerful cooperation is and how we've been evolving in that direction?
Well, it seems like in nature that the entire time it's been cooperation when you actually dig into it. There's a section in my book called The Principle of Cooperation. It talks about how, you know, all these things work together, from the deers, the wolves, the berry bushes, the birds, all of it's actually working together to enhance the whole system. And just like with the Native Americans, when they harvested meat, they felt like the animal was surrendering itself, their spirit, to them. And it was a gift. And it's like when we die, we are literally a gift to the earth, that if we make ourselves toxic and then pass on that onto the earth in our grave, it's like, no, we need every moment of our life to be a gift. And I feel like the microbes, the fungi, actually, you know, we're all part fungi. I mean, if you've read Radical Mycology, I highly recommend it. But everything's fungal. And if you study fungi, it doesn't make any sense nowadays. We've gotten so far deep. It does things that that are altruistic. It does things that doesn't make any sense. It defies our categorization of the hierarchy of beings and definition of what is alive and what is not. It collects multiple nuclei, and you don't know which brain is which. How does it switch between the two? Something above it is controlling it. It's absolutely incredible. So we're in this time period, and it's explosion. It's truly an explosion of information, of realization, just layering upon. Everyone's like, wow, look at the technology. It's like, no. Look at nature right now through the lenses and the information, the truths we've found. And then look at ourselves. I mean, we're at radio show, you know what I mean? We are at this cusp moment in this world. And it deals with nonviolence. It deals with nature. It gets down to our perception of ourselves and our roles.
That is beautiful, Matt, and I want to say, I think there's something we need to add. You're absolutely right that we're at this crisis already. We have run into resistance. But the fact is, here in Northern California, you know, Berkeley and other places, and Los Angeles too, we've seen illegal gardens be bulldozed by the police. Now, that's a loss on one level. What I maintain, what we try and maintain at Meta, is that You can lose the battles and go on to win the war, but you need to have a strategy to do that. So here's a thought I want to throw out to you. We recently had the kind of confrontation that you've been talking about around healthcare. And the American people, to speak generally, said, hell no, you know, you cannot take away our health care. And I wonder if we could apply that thinking to the kind of respect for nature that you've just been talking about with permaculture, that if we could transfer that sensitivity to their need to be healthy, to the awareness of the role nature plays in that, we could maybe harness that huge popular response, which even the enormous power that's collected in Washington wasn't able to overcome, and add that permaculture awareness to the health awareness and grow forward from there. So that's an idea that just came up for me while you were talking, and I'd like to bounce it off you for one of our closing thoughts here.
Yeah, so I totally think that we can band together, and I think that that's what's going on. I don't know if it's happening up where you are, but down in Southern California, the response, the uncertainty about our health care has prompted doctors to create their own networks, has prompted individuals to gather their community and talk to their neighbors and say, we don't know what's going to happen, but my son cannot go off medication. What are we going to do? My wife's a three-time cancer survivor. That's why I'm so passionate about this, because if I didn't have clean food, I wouldn't have the confidence that I could, you know, feed my wife properly and not, like, keep cancer away and not make sure my, you know, protect my kids to the fullest. We need to get people to realize that if we work together at a local level, that we can make change happen. And every garden that gets buried is one garden closer to all the gardens being allowed and it becoming a movement. How many people did it take to stand up to stop segregation? Took a lot of sacrifice. And that's why we honor them. And that's why we remember them. And you know what I mean? That's why your opener has that. So I think that's what we need to do, is we need to look to the local, look to what we can do, and then start showing the people in our community that we really care about them. That you may be fighting us, but we really care about you. And this is your garden too. And that will, I mean, they can't sustain this. And that's why more and more we see the systems, all the centralized systems of control, of violence, because all of them are violent. You don't pay taxes, we're going to come and arrest you. You don't go follow the draft, we're going to get you. You know, we're going to, by the force of, point of a gun, we're going to force you to do things. But that story is done. People are, not motivated by that at all. People are walking away, and they're looking for something new. And that's why it's this moment. We're right there.
You're listening to Nonviolence Radio, and that was Matt Powers, the permaculturestudent.com. Matt Powers, do you have any last statement to make to our listeners about the power of permaculture?
Absolutely. Like I said in my blog, you know, if you're feeling hopeless, you're feeling like, what am I going to do? I mean, this sounds great, Matt. You're talking a good game, but what do I actually do? Mm-hmm. Get out in nature. Go for a walk. Watch the birds. Get close enough that you can see the insects on the ground. You know, take time to slow down and see the system you're actually in. And then watch things like the Lessons of the Lust Plateau on YouTube, or Greening the Desert with Jeff Lawton on YouTube, or From Sand to Soil in 7 Hours on the TED Talk about nanoclay. Or you could, you know, check out my book. Or you could start, you know, putting it into action. Start a garden. Compost all your organic matter. You know, all your paper waste, all your cardboard waste. That's fungal food. So you can turn that into fungus and then turn that into worm food. Then, you know, meditate. Pray and gratitude journal. And I know this seems like out of the blue, but this is critical, because unless you're meditating, you won't clear your mind so that you won't have, you know, control over your mind. If you're not praying, you won't be able to direct your mind. And then if, you know, you're not having gratitude and chronicling it every day, you're not reframing your mind so that you can start the next day on that next foot. Because life, you know, if you hold still, it keeps moving. We got to move with the next foot and keep running. So I believe that hope is paired to action and observation. And I think permaculture is nonviolence in action as we partner with our communities and our ecologies to create an abundance.
Thank you so much, Matt Powers, for joining us here on Nonviolence Radio today.
Thank you. It was awesome.
Yeah. Greetings, everybody.
And that is it for Epicenter today, a rebroadcast of a nonviolence